like us to focus on?
Any questions? We have a beautiful group of people and we'd like to have them the chance to address the questions. Any of your questions? Yes, please.
What does that first mantra up there mean below Rama Sankirtan?
Okay.
And can you tell it, teach it to us?
Sure. So can everybody see the sign? Maybe we can bring the sign closer. So this first mantra Maharaj told us about is a set of names. First, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who Maharaj described to us as being Sri Sri Radha Krishna combined, or the united form of the divine couple. And particularly, united in the spirit of distributing the love that they have for one another, or the love that they appreciate amongst one another. They want to extend the opportunity to be a part of that exchange of love to all. So when particularly they're in a mood of magnanimity, they assume this form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And then the next line, Prabhu Nityananda. Prabhu Nityananda. You can repeat.
Prabhu Nityananda.
Prabhu Nityananda. So Prabhu Nityananda is another name for Avadut, whom our dear Maharaj is named after. And Nityananda Prabhu is known for having shaken off, having become disinterested in all conventions of society, and whose behavior is completely unpredictable, and whose only purpose is to unconditionally extend compassion and love to people, especially his aggressors. So when you hear this name, Prabhu Nityananda, then you may think, this is the most intense expression of compassion. When divinity is coming to distribute itself in the most, you could say, aggressively merciful manner. Then we have Sri Advaita.
Sri Advaita.
And this is another associate of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is known to be an avatar of Mahavishnu. Then, and it is said that Mahavishnu, the preserver of this world, he is overseeing everything. He sees every single thing that happens in the life of every single person. And observing all of that, what is his conclusion? What is his feeling? Seeing what every single person is going through in all detail. His feeling is, the people are suffering for want of love for Krishna. Their only real lack is that love for God. If they had that, their lives would be perfect. And every single problem, difficulty, karmic entanglement that they find themselves in is a complication of that absence of love. So Mahavishnu, observing the whole of the universe, he began to cry and to pray. Oh Lord, please come and give the people love. Give them, show them how really they can love purely. And in response to that prayer, Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda came and distributed this gift. So within this mantra is an intense sense of gratitude. That to have learned about love for God, to have learned about Radha and Krishna, the divine couple, then before we will go to chant their names, we will always chant the names of those who gave us that chance, who extended us that divine gift out of their unconditional grace and compassion. So that is Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda and Sri Advaita. Then we have Garadhara.
Garadhara.
So Garadhara is said to be the form that Srimati Radharani, the supreme or Purna Shakti, the eternal divine manifestation of the Lord's eternal energy or Shakti, assumes in his pastimes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we have Srivas Adi. Srivas Adi. And that's combined with the last line, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda means all those persons who are devotees of Gaura. Gaura means golden. So one name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whom you see here, is the golden avatar of divine love. So for short, he is called Gaura, or the golden one. So all who have received this divine gift and who wish to chant as an expression of their reciprocation with His grace, they are known as Gaura Bhaktas. So whenever we have a kirtan, we are not only evoking the grace of the Lord, but we are evoking the grace of every single devotee, of every person who cherishes this in their heart. We want the grace of every single one of them when we begin to chant, so that we may be brought in to that universal spirit, that universal purity of love that is the fulfillment of our life. So let's try the whole thing. We'll split it in half. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda.
Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasari.
Alright. It takes a little time. It's not the easiest mantra to learn right away. But I promise you it is very sweet. And if you chant it every morning, within a few days, it will be on the tip of your tongue.
Interesting. So, when you chant Hare Krishna mantra, you have to chant with a very pure heart. Otherwise, it's not going to deliver you love of God. If you chant this mantra, it says, even the most sinner who can't pronounce the name of Krishna can chant this mantra. So that mantra is like key opening, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Krishna Chaitanya. What does Chaitanya mean? Chaitanya or Chit is consciousness. So when we say, what is real life? Is that existence? Is that like you wake up and you exist? No. Real life is when you've been touched, your soul has been touched in nectar of divine feelings. And that's why Krishna Chaitanya. So only, it's an interesting thing, only in Sankirtan means actually sacrifice. But if you know what sacrifices are, like fire sacrifice or other sacrifice, they're done different rituals and ceremonies when you sacrifice different objects to divinity. But the highest object, as we know, is self. So when you sacrifice self, and actually it's very interesting, but I'd like to ask Maharaj a question, because he's also very, what is actually self-sacrifice? How is it described? I like to learn more because that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, self-sacrifice. One term we have for that in the scriptures is seva. Perhaps you've acquainted with this word, seva. So seva has been defined by one of our acharyas, Srila Sanatan Goswami, as chittanu vritti, which literally means to act in accord with the mind of the other. Loosely, to satisfy the beloved. To do whatever it is that really will produce the satisfaction in whom you are trying to serve. So self-sacrifice means to dedicate ourselves, to give ourselves, and specifically that means our actions, our speech, and our thoughts, all aspects of our life, to dedicate that. But dedicate that like what? Like we threw it on the ground and now it just sits there? Right? Or we threw it in the fire and now it burned up and it's gone? But rather it is a dynamic thing. It is an ongoing thing. And what we will be called upon to maintain it will change. So it is a constant state of self-surrender, what our Param Gurudev called constant conscious surrender at every moment. And as it's described by Srila Rupa Goswami, Ahe Riva Gati Premna Swabhava Kutido Bhavet, which means that the natural movements of love are curved like the movements of a snake. So what we will be called upon in order to really satisfy whom we are trying to serve, that will change, that will adjust. So self-sacrifice means to be ready for that, to welcome that, and act chitanubrit, according to what will be satisfying to them.
Well, it's a very important answer because the spiritual life is very dynamic and you have to catch up with the flow. Oh, there are very standard things that you do, just like you eat food every day. But when you eat food every day, you feel the taste and you feel fulfillment, right? So you can't say, oh, I already ate. No, in a healthy life, you have to eat, but you have to have a hunger. So what it says is, first you have to develop your spiritual hunger. If you don't have a spiritual hunger, if you don't have a spiritual appetite, then you don't have spiritual taste. Or, you know, if you were to say, oh, Hare Krishna, oh, I already know that. Oh, yoga, I already know that. Oh, Sufi, I already know that. Which means, like, basically you express yourself, oh, yeah, I have no appetite. Which comes basically through ego. So, ego is our best enemy, is our best friend. And my question to Maharaj, so, two things. How to get healthy appetite and what, how to deal with ego. Because ego is like, my ego is very big, more fat than me. It's really staying behind me every time and pushing me and telling me you're so great and you know this, you know that. So how to deal with ego in a way that ego become friend for our enemy. And how to create a spiritual appetite.
Well, we can say that appetite can be awakened by being in the company of those who have it. When we find people who are very hungry and they can't stop talking about what they're going to have or where they're going to go or how it will be made, then easily we're thinking, oh, I would also like that. When someone describes, oh, have you had the latest thing available over here? It's so good and it has this and that. And then we're thinking, oh, I want to try that. So by associating with people who have that spiritual appetite, who have that seeking spirit, who are open and want to draw new things in, and to see the joy, the enlivenment that they have in their life, then we're thinking, I want to experience that. I want to be like that. So in short, to get appetite, we want association with the hungry, which means we want association with the sadhus, the sincere seekers of truth. And the second part, about how to deal with ego. So, to understand, even the word ego means simply I. Me, just I. So it's not an inherently bad thing. Like, unless we accept that my very existence is bad. But we don't accept that. We say that, as Maharaj explained, reality is beautiful. And every single person within it has a beautiful, important contribution to make to that. There is a purpose and a beautiful potential in the existence of every living being. So you, that I, is a beautiful thing, is a wonderful thing, is something of an unlimited potential. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you could experience or even could begin to understand the ultimate potential, the ultimate wonder that you have within you, you would just be astonished. In short, that the self is an astonishingly wonderful thing. But, okay. But when we have a misconception of ourselves, when we acquire a false ego, then all that wonder remains hidden. All that wonder is lying in the future. So, false ego means some misidentification of who we really are, and some subsequent sense of desire or entitlement based on that. For example, if I say, my true nature is to be a citizen of this country, then my entitlement is to the rights of a citizen. Right? This is a normal thing. Once we have a particular identity, we acquire a certain sense of entitlement or possessiveness about something. So when we misidentify our true self, then we get a wrong sense of possessiveness. And when we have a wrong sense of possessiveness, we inevitably experience dissatisfaction and suffering because we're thinking we want and we're trying to have things that we're not actually meant to have. Inevitably, we suffer. So this is the spiritual perspective on life, that all suffering is actually a spiritual disease. It's not a mental, emotional, or physical disease or a scarcity of physical resources. Really, the kernel of all suffering is at the root of ego, that misconception of our real self. And the route to healing every form of suffering is to acquire that real, true sense of self and to then act according to that. And then, like a domino effect, all the emotional problems, mental problems, physical problems, competition over resources, it all can become adjusted. So, to transition from the false self to the true self. This is the spiritual path. This is the spiritual necessity of everyone. So the most popular varieties of false ego are that I'm the body that I see with my senses, that I'm this physical body that has a temporary existence, that has these certain needs, and that is fulfilled only by gratifying the senses thereof. This is the most popular type of physical of false ego. Second most popular, the mind. I'm this intellect and this reason that knows this and thinks that and analyzes that, and anything that doesn't conform to my faculty of reason either doesn't exist or is a bad thing fit to be corrected by me. And, you know, 1,001 permutations thereafter. So what the Bhagavad Gita, what all the great wisdom teachers and scriptures are teaching us is that you are not really the physical body, you are not really the mind. It's very beautifully explained in Gita, where the Lord says, Indriyani paranyahur, indriyebhya param mano, indriyebhya manasastha parabudhir yogudhe paratas tusa. Superior to gross matter are the senses. Superior to the senses, the mind. Superior to the mind is the intellect, or the faculty of reason. And superior to that is you. Is your real self. Is the eternal spiritual particle of consciousness. That is the seer and the living animator of all those layers that were just described. So in short, we can become free from false ego when we distinguish between the seer and the seen. And we no longer identify ourselves with anything that we can see, but rather simply with the conscious essence that's doing the perception. And secondly, sorry, Marshall, I'll be short. The second critical point about ego is, one, to understand that its nature is conscious. And second, to understand its pragmatic existence, which is that of service, that of love. It is not just a conscious entity doing nothing. It is a conscious entity whose inherent function is to contribute, to serve, and to love. So if we can then reconceive of our entire life, our entire environment, all of our relationships upon that idea that I'm an eternal soul on an eternal journey, trying to understand how I can best love and serve the greater whole that I'm a part of, then every day becomes better than the last. And all the suffering that we are so accustomed to gradually falls away.
What Maharaj said is very important for basic discussion, because each of our lives has a duration. And think of this, it's very popular nowadays, virtual reality. So technically speaking, as a soul acquire virtual reality body and senses to act a particular short time. That's what life is. Your soul, totally separate from physical self, but at this point you have this virtual reality created body of women, men, smart, rich, poor, and you're acting in this time very, very short. Actually, life is very short. And it takes a lot of time to learn how to use this body. You know, when the baby was born, it's not easy to walk, it's not easy to like define, learn how to run your consciousness. So think of this, how much time actually we've got in our life. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj gave you very interesting statistics. He said 30% of our life was sleep, which totally, you know, being wasted unless you have a few divine dreams and, you know, go to party first. I don't have money. Still go there. Maybe you get like divine dreams, something like that, but most of your life and dream is wasted. Then think of this, what else life is? How much time you work a day? Well, there are some of us can be proud to say, I'm not working. But it's not true. Your physical activities take a lot of time. Wake up, clean your body, make food. Even if you don't go physically to work, you will enter your mind into news or books or media or information. So, technically speaking, here's the question. How much really you have true existence a day alive? As actually Srimad Bhagavatam said, you might have a few waking moments. So, if you have a few awakening moments in your life, what would be those awakening moments? Actually, I'd like to ask some of you, did anybody have any awakening moments in their life? Raise your hands. All right. I would like you to share a very short form.
Like Christmas one? Like heard this? Okay.
But you can speak without mics and hear your screen. So let's start from. We want to talk real to a real awakening moment. Really big change in your life.
I was in Bellevue, Washington. I was walking on Bellevue College campus. I'd just come off a silent retreat because my mind was in a peaceful place. And I looked up and I saw the moon. And I realized that the moon was God, and that it was not different from me. And actually, there's no God. It's actually all me. And then I just couldn't really handle that, and I was like, okay. But it was a really beautiful moment.
Yeah, thank you so much. Actually, realizing our unity in the universe and consciousness is a great, great gift. Anybody else wants to share? Please, if you want to share a few things with people.
For me, I think it was as you described about the ego and the dissolution of letting go of the ego because it represents the false self. And going past the ego, letting it dissolve, connecting beyond mind, beyond self. And it happens in moments, and I think that's the function of kirtan, to stop the mind, stop the ego, go beyond that. And it's beyond duality. And it happens on occasion, and it's a practice, and it takes work, and it comes and goes. But it's worth the journey. There's a journey of work for me.
Thank you so much. It's very inspiring to hear from someone that with daily spiritual routine will be blessed by a moment of awakening that's worth everything.
Yeah, my awakening happened April 3rd, 2005. 30 odd years of active addiction. I've got a 12-step program and I had an awakening. I've been on a sick.
Describe what was awakening to you?
Obviously, my head stopped. Felt detached.
Beautiful. Well, thanks very much for sharing your deep thoughts.
My first awakening was in the summer of 2012 at a retreat that I went to decide whether to divorce. And since at that time, I began to see, feel, and understand the universe communicating with a higher order of intelligence and actually begin a sense of dialogue. Since then, the awakenings have continued by the more and more frequent and exponential growth. And now it's about every several hours.
Wow, sounds like your network connection has been established. That's great.
Anyone else?
And I'd just like to say, every one of you felt a particular moment in their life. Think of this. There's a plane of consciousness where we're not only constantly conscious, even when we sleep, eat, we're also experiencing much greater than ourselves. Because when we connect with Krishna, it's not about what we can experience. We're a very finite soul. Krishna is infinite. So think of this. He's sharing his own love, not the love soul can produce, his own divine love with living beings. That's a wonderful thing, that you come to divinity and divinity say, welcome home, I love you. Where have you been? Oh, I've been wandering here or there. Don't worry about this. Billions of life is nothing. I just give you a chance and opportunity to separate, to get real hunger. So hunger for spiritual life, that's what we're all seeking for. And we're really, really grateful to all of you because, you know, I can tell you, I'm a very bad monk. I'm the worst against monks. So when people ask me how you're doing, I say, I'm trying to become vegetarian. It's a joke, but in a sense, like, I know, I don't eat spiritual food. I eat for my physical life. Time to time, I'm thinking, oh, I have to think about God. So, it's, you know, like, I've learned how to detect my own false nature, which is, takes some time, it's also hard. But I figured there's a particular moment when I'm in spiritual association, especially when I teach. That's when I learn things. When I teach things, I learn. Because it's very difficult to have spiritual life on your own and by the book. It's all theory. In the practical way, it has to be living exchange, dealing with people, dealing with yourself, dealing with those who are superior teachers, try to process that comes to you on a daily basis. And, you know, you're not becoming a winner every day. Spiritual life is not like a winner every day. You know, you're boxing with yourself and you win. Most likely you lose. But as you become a gradual conscious loser, which is our true position, otherwise why am I this broke, right? Then some appreciation for those moments are start developing in your heart. And you start feeling your inner thirst. And that's where spiritual life starts clicking to you. Because spiritual life, you know, is a very progressive process. It has different, I mean, and I feel like, why am I doing so many bad things? Why am I, like, always falling down? And here's what I've learned about myself. Krishna's allowed me to go down because of my ego. But as I go down, I think, oh my God, I was on the higher stage at this time. Now I'm going down again. Why is that? And as Maharaj explained, so interesting thing Krishna said to Arjuna, and you remember, Krishna and Arjuna are friends. Really, that's like the most incredible spiritual book because God is a friend. And not just some kind of a, like, you know, hello, me, my Facebook friend, the real friend. Well, Krishna is driving his chariot, so like a Uber driver, like, hello, my name is Krishna, where do you like to go? So Krishna is like your intimate driver. And based on that moment of driving his friend in front of the most deadly battlefield ever, Krishna tells to Arjuna a few important things. So one important thing is about love, and Maharaj knows this slogan. When you say it's like the fire being hidden by smoke, is that love exists in every living entity's heart. Therefore, Arjuna, you have to bring all this energy out of your heart forever. And I'd like to hear from Maharaj what you think about that, because that's what lost is. It's a very deep conversation. How to rid of it's another story, how to make self-liberation. So Maharaj, please give some kind of this look.
Maharaj is mentioning a section in Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna is he's going through an introspective process, and he's looking at the mistakes he's made in his life, looking at the shortcomings or the parts of himself that he wants to improve, and then he's observing that even when I want to improve, even when I'm trying to follow the right path, it feels as though there's this force dragging me away from that. It feels as though there's this friction, there's this countercurrent that's working over me, even when I don't want to be doing that. Why is that? What is that force that compels me to do wrong, even when I want to do right? That's his question. So in response to that, Krishna explains by saying, Kami Shukuresha Rajaguna Samudbhava. That the cause of that is kama, or in English we say lust or desire. And that is a product of rajaguna, which means the mode of passion. So it is explained very systematically that all through the universe, all through our daily lives, all through our behavior, our food preferences, our decision making, are three qualities of energy. And that as we act, actions, food, behavior, events, everything can have some predominating energy to that. So one is called goodness or sattva, which means what is beneficial for myself as well as for all. Then there is rajas, which means what may lead to some gain for me, but is done not with the welfare of anyone else in concern, just whether I get something out of it. And then there is tamo, what we call ignorance, which means acting in a way that's beneficial neither for myself nor for others. So if we look at the way, let's take, you know, 3-day weekend camp out festivals. Okay? Here we have a festival, a unique festival, which is trying to be or establishing an environment of sattva, where people can come and participate in something that's good for them and good for others, it's good for the planet, it's good for everyone. Then you have festivals that are based on the mode of passion. Come here, get drunk, hear loud music, dance late, don't care about anything. Just have a great time. Right? Escape, sure. Many people going on like that. And then you have festivals, maybe not so well-organized festivals, where people get together and they say, let's just go, you know, smash cars and do graffiti and, you know, break stuff. And some people, they get together for a weekend and, you know, shoot broken beer bottles with automatic weapons and talk about how bad everyone else is except me. And, you know, these type of things, this is what we call tamagun. So people can get together and have a great time, and at the end of the weekend they're going, wow, I had this great weekend, right? And somebody's out there a little further in the desert shooting beer cans with their automatic weapons going, yeah, man, this is so great. And some other guys are like drunk, watching football, watching baseball, going, oh yeah, my team won, yeah. And then here are the yogis at the Shakti Fest. Having their sattvic experience, and everybody's going, oh, that was such a nice weekend. So these are the modes of nature. And when you're really into one of those modes, each one is going like, yeah, this really feels good. So just to get directly to Maharaj's question, the experience of lust or the experience of desire, that is the mode of passion. That is a very, very powerful current of energy that is more predominant, actually, than sattva and tama, for the most part. The main prevailing current is that consideration of me first. So that energy working over us drags us, compels us to engage in selfish, self-centered behavior that's not healthy, ultimately for myself or for my relationships or other persons around me. So spiritual practices like yoga are what give us the experience of coming out of that influence of rajagun, that out of that passion, and coming into the mode of goodness. And then kirtan, the chanting of the holy names, bhakti yoga, that is something that elevates us not only up to sattva-gun, but to what we call nirgun, or a state that's beyond all three of these modes. Something that's pure and transcendental, and is part of the plane of existence that's the, for the soul itself. So the way that Krishna advises how to deal with this passion, how to deal with this lust, he says actually a verse that we already discussed. First realize who you are. You're the soul. Your true nature is to serve, is to love, is to be a unit of goodness and contribution towards this greater whole, and ultimately towards me, meaning towards Krishna. So when we can have that awakening of our real self and apply it in the form of devotion and service, then we transcend not only rajagun, passion, not only sattvagun, or a worldly sense of goodness, but we enter into something pure and transcendental, which has benefit not only for everyone temporarily in this present life, but what is beneficial to all eternally, and what is satisfying to the Supreme Source, Krishna himself. So in short, Marge, how can we really deal with lust and desire? To rather than act according to selfish desire, act according to the desire or the hunger, the need of the soul, which is really to connect with our source, to connect with Krishna, and to render service in kind.
I appreciate it. It's a great answer. One of a kind. See, we have a typical nature. Everyone has a nature. And you can't really fight your nature. You can't really fight your desires. You can transform. So the way we do this transformation is Krishna advises in Gita. Whatever you do, you try to do this in Supreme. It sounds pretty crazy in the beginning. Or you want to eat, so you offer me your food. Or you want to have a good time, but you know, try to spend that time with devotees and for the spiritual benefit of your soul. Don't just waste 2 hours watching TV and on the end when you've got a brain full of negative information, so try to use your valuable time very preciously, you know. And finally, Krishna said, "Mat parayanaha." Eventually, by structuring your acting towards love, devotion, you eventually will reach it. So basically, Gita is the book where you find karma yoga, dhyana yoga, all kinds of yoga. What yoga is? Yoga is connection, which is different from what we normally say, karma, activity. Karma is for self, the negative self. So whatever you act for negative self, whether you do good or bad, you'll get a reaction. But once you start acting with the spiritual thought and mind for the satisfaction of the center, then the whole reaction will change. And the example is very good. When you try to plant a tree, you're not trying to plant every leaf. Because people say, oh, I want to fight hunger, oh, I want to fight ignorance, I want to fight disease. But really, it's like trying to water each leaf of a tree. Try to find a root and plant root and tree root. So pour your water on root, and root is very deep. So Krishna is explaining in Gita, he's saying, well, you have to find the roots. But banyan trees, sometimes roots come from up. It's the eating tree, you see, the roots coming from the branches. So basically, Krishna is explaining, the roots of everything is spiritual reality. So, you know, sometimes some person asked our Prabhu Maharaj, why are innocent people dying now? You know, Syria or elsewhere. And Guru Maharaj said, unfortunately, I have to declare one thing, there's not innocent people. I have children being bombed. There's no innocent children. In previous lives, they acquire karma to be in this situation. There's no innocent people in this world. However, we have compassion, we have love, and we have to understand what is the best medicine. The best medicine is conscious transformation. So, Guru Maharaj said, you cannot change the world, but you can change only one person yourself. That's a great statement. You know, think of this, if more people be conscious, the place become naturally a better place, right? So, and that's a very beautiful thing. By changing yourself, you're changing the world you live in. And that's true because your friends are changed, right? Like you've been, I'm
Fight Club. Have you seen Fight Club? Okay. Very famous movie, Fight Club. Okay, you don't have to. Because you already had the awakening moment. In other words, this movie, I mean, the guy is coming to his work and he's discovering that everything he did is useless. And he started breaking computers and tables. It's one of my favorite movies. I'd like to make Fight Club at Oktoberfest as well. Next year. But remember, we already need Fight Club. Fight Club. Fighting misconceptions.
Yeah.
Everything is misconceptions. So when we have all these misconceptions about ourselves, the world we live in, the people with, and our activities, we're suffering because we have to suffer, and that's good. And I'll tell you why suffering is very good. Suffering is the best medicine for transformation. And that's why pain is a great gift of the Lord. You just have to understand how to deal with it, because most people like to deal with pain with painkillers, isn't it? And that's like the worst spiritual, it's called spiritual painkillers, which I love to accept myself. You know, attack self. What do you love and accept? You have to go very deeply and search for the true self before you know what you love and accept. So there are many so-called spiritual painkillers on the market, like Tylenol, you know, Kavin and stuff. And there comes in different forms of different spiritual conceptions. But the true conception, the true transformation is a heart operation. It's a very painful process. You know, so maybe on the way to that operation you need a few painkillers. But really, without this inner operation, you cannot relieve yourself from this material environment. So that's what Krishna is saying about Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Finally, after studying all yoga systems, which Krishna very clearly explained to Arjuna, the karma yoga, the path of knowledge, the path of action, you know, he eventually tell the path of devotion, and he said, well, the hardcore process of the separation is surrender. And why so painful? Because the ego. Remember, ego thing, I'm the master, I'm the Lord, everything's for me. I'm the person who vote, I'm the person who choose, I'm the person who decides whether I have to serve God or not. You know, sometimes like, I really have to wake up and I tell Krishna, why do I have to serve you? And Krishna tells me, actually, I'm serving you, man. Because think of this, we get air, we get sun, we get everything from Supreme. So we can't say we're great servitors, right? But our ego makes us think this way. So this is a very interesting way how you transport yourself and what is the art of surrender. This is a really, really important part of our spiritual life, the art of surrender. And as Maharaj said, you practice this every day. It's not like, oh, I surrendered, you know, 25 years ago, I surrendered. I remember, it was great. What about today? What about tomorrow? What about after 5 minutes? Is it a dynamic process, or this is something, oh, surrender is like a tattoo. Yeah, surrender, man. So surrender is not a tattoo. Surrender is not a slogan. Surrender is its core spiritual life and existence. And the most important thing is surrender to whom? Krishna say, Yena Bhakta Jana Partai. If anybody tells I surrender to you, I don't believe it. Why? Why Krishna's not doing it? Because Krishna knows if somebody will try to surrender to him, he will not do this directly. He'll find some surrender soul and go to him. Because Krishna knows I'm encircled by surrender souls. So, I accepting surrender souls, and surrender souls, they're my great devotees. So does anybody say, oh, Krishna, I'm surrendered to you directly. Krishna say, I don't buy this. Do you know? Because you have to live in the world of surrender soul. I think of this, our Guru Maharaj would say, if you go to the spiritual world, everyone is Buddha, Jesus Christ, level of like, go and sacrifice himself. Every small inhabitant of the spiritual world willing to sacrifice himself in numerous times for satisfaction of Krishna without any reward. Think of this, no rewards. That's great spiritual beings. Be willing to go to material world and stay here forever until everybody will be liberated. That's how great the souls are. So,
That's why when teacher, spiritual master, we're looking for a spiritual master. Why? Why is that important for us? Because he's a surrender soul. And in this case, I'd like Maharaj to finish that program because we will run the digital dome of this sometime. Our program is to, after this lecture, to go and chant. We actually have the blue dome, the Jagannath dome with the digital projection system. And we're going to do all kinds of crazy things in this dome. Spiritual programs, lectures, screening shows, our theater music. So it's like an ultimate dome we have, but we'll try different new technology as well as old technologies, just Kirtan, Prasadam, and spiritual association. And I'd like Maharaj to complete this program and we'll go chant because our time is over. So you finish the program and go chant. And you can, and whatever guests are friends can find us in this blue dome at the same time, right?
So we're in the Jagannath Dome, which is, if you come out to the front gate where you register, if you hang an immediate right, you'll see a large blue-green dome, 8 meters tall. That's it. Right behind the food court.
Yes.
So we'll be there tonight, all day tomorrow, all day Sunday, and everyone's welcome there. We have a temple sanctuary for anyone who needs shelter from the wind and the heat. We have prasadam, we'll have kirtan going on, we'll have dome projection shows, and we'll have friends who you can share
it's
spiritual
also
discussion
with. It's also
shelter
from the self. From negative self. Positive self-welcome. But anyway, here's what we'd like to do at this festival, because it's run by our friend Sridhar, a very dear friend, very good person who will soul heart and try to make this thing happen. We believe that chanting and hearing divine names are the best for this event. So what we're going to do, we're going to walk around and chant, and then we're going to end up at the dome, and as we finish the standard spiritual program with lectures and talks, at 9:30 we start the entertainment part, which is also pretty interesting because we think new technology should be used for spiritual messages. So we have a few shows, dome shows, and sound healing system, and our friends, musicians, coming with kirtan, so you're welcome to come and have a little, you know, enjoying time in our dome. And so thanks Maharaj, and thanks everybody else. So we're just going to chant. If anybody wants to join us, we're very happy that you continue with us. Otherwise, we'll see you in the dome, and you will enjoy yourself. And if you want to be on our mailing list, Maharaj is collecting information because he's traveling all over yoga centers and programs, so it's good if you have your information that you know what's going on around the world. Hare Krishna. And so we'll continue our auspicious chanting. Thanks very much for the sound, guys. They did wonderful work.
Josh,
they're serving.